home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore positive. Somewhere around here, I have some Maryland Lottery scratch-offs. I put them in my bag. I'm going to whip those out. They are the Back to the Future Maryland Lottery. We're doing the Crab Cake Tour. We're here at beautiful Coco's. We are in Lauraville, one of our defending champions, and Senator Corey McCray has made his way back. I mean, you live over here. You know, whenever I want to do the show, I'm like, hey, I'm coming over to Coco's. You're like, I live over there, man. So. And Mars says you're in here all the time.
Yeah, best crab cakes, hands down. My wife sends me out every couple weeks. Make sure, hey, go get me some Coco's crab cakes.
Well, I got Jamie Costello coming by today.
Nice.
I got you. I got Howard Perlow. Everybody today picked Coco's because when I give them that option, if they live anywhere in the area, you know, next week we're going to be at Red Brick Station up in White Marsh.
There's no other choice.
Yeah,
no other choice.
I mean, it's a great city with a lot of great things. What's going on, man? You guys were busy down in Annapolis. I was watching everything that was going on, and the state has changed. The country has changed since the last time you and I got together. I just want to get a little State of the Union from you and what's going on in 45.
You know what? So you're absolutely right. This was a very different session than what I was used to. One of it was because we walked into a budget deficit of several billion dollars. I sit on the budget committee, so that's why I was super active this respective legislative session, one of 13 members that sit on that budget committee. But I actually chair the Health and Human Services. So there were a number of cuts that was proposed, introduced, just in reference to folks with developmental disabilities. And we had to make sure that we moved in a spirit that was very thoughtful, took in consideration. But that's one of the things that I've learned in my 10 years of doing being in the legislature is bringing all the stakeholders to the table, hear their voices, and then render decisions, but do it with them.
Well, I'm going to talk to you about $15 an hour and minimum wage because it was brought up here at Coco's and we're in a place where employees are running around bringing crab cakes on trays and there's people here. Middle of the afternoon at Coco's is crazy here, but there is two sides to every story, right? Mm-hmm. Like the internet taxation and digital tax and all that, mm-hmm. that obviously came to my desk doing mm-hmm. what I do for a living. This deficit, I mean, I was out in front of Kerwin. You were mm-hmm. out. Everybody I know that's left-minded, I can't say right-minded because mm-hmm. the right's not in its right mind of recent years, but the money part of this and the balance part is my Republican friend said, we can't afford it, we can't afford it. It's a great idea, it's pie in the sky. The Democrats said, let's go for it. Hogan backed off of it and then left it for Wes, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have to figure this out. And I haven't talked to anybody that's had great ideas about this multi-billion dollar deficit in our budget. I mm-hmm. address that from the top down. Did you see this coming? And obviously, you're the one staying up all night trying to solve the problem at this
yep.
point, right? A problem that was created by government, really.
Yep. So I'll hit a couple points, and I'll try to do it in the order that I heard you say it in, because you said a lot. One of the things that I'll speak to is the blueprint for Maryland's future with Kerwin. I'll then move over to the budget, and then we'll close with maybe the $15 minimum
Perfect.
Wage.
Perfect. Let's go. I love having you by. I want to hear what you think.
Yep. So in reference to Kerwin, I believe that we can't afford not to do it. So when we think about K-12 education and we think about the employers in the Baltimore region, the state of Maryland, from that standpoint, they have to have a competitive workforce, the most trained workforce, and you have to know how to read and you have to know how to write. The fundamentals of those things is what we're doing when we're investing in concentration of poverty, when we're investing with folks that made English as a second language, when we're investing in teachers and the level and credibility of the teachers that's coming to our respective space. So when I looked at the blueprint and the cuts that was introduced, I was hard stop against them because I can see right now the gains that's happening at Johnson Square Elementary with Principal O because he now has literacy coach or just the simple fact that he has a vice principal. I can see Principal Ancobia right up the street with Gardenville Elementary and the gains that's being made. So I'm in one of my schools at least once a week because I want to have a granular level understanding of what's taking place.
This money is in people, more resources, correct?
It's in people. Yeah, it's in the operating components of the respective school system. So we didn't have things like simple things like an art teacher or a music teacher. These are things that our young folks, because we know when we have that level of diverse learning, when we have that exposure, when we have access, your brain is working in a different type of way that maybe you one day will work at the Hippodrome. Maybe one day you will work at the Lyric because you can see the arts components that wasn't existing several years ago from that standpoint. The literacy, we may have the next STEM educators or mathematicians right there, but because of the investments that we're making at this moment, we're going to see the long-term ramifications or benefits of making those investments. So I'm glad that we restored that funding. We did make some level of cuts, but it was not drastic as the cuts that was introduced. Some of the cuts, and I want to be very transparent and honest. So, like, we restored concentration of poverty. We restored some of the foundational formulas, but the one thing that we pulled back on was teacher collaborative. So where teachers have the opportunity to be able to spend more time on the planning component of the education piece versus so out of the classroom being able to plan and things of that nature. We have a teacher shortage. There was some case to be made. We cannot have everything. Things are about figuring out where's the middle, and that's where we left the legislature as from a standpoint that we were in the middle. I'm now going to move over to the budget component, and I'll speak to some of the development disabled things of that nature. So you had education, you had DDA, you also had transportation, because we ended up finding
DDA.
Development disability.
Okay, yep. Sure.
So we had these things that were coming. And the unfortunate thing is I believe that it's important. One of my values is that communities, especially vulnerable communities, such as our young scholars, such as our seniors, but more importantly, folks, if you do have a disability, we as a community have a responsibility to wrap our arms. When I think of DDA and what I'm talking about is education. They have to be in certain settings. They have to be in certain environments for them to receive the education for them to be able to thrive. I also do think that everybody has the ability to contribute. So we as a state make sure that there's workforce opportunities for folks that may have a disability, and that's a good thing. And then
all the stuff coming from the president with DEI and you know, inclusion. I mean, not inclusion, your color, my color, inclusion of people who are less fortunate, people who need to be contributing to our society and can.
Yep.
And this nonsense of autistic people being incapable of contributing is disgraceful. It's a disgraceful ideology, Corey.
The other thing is similar how you see folks congregating at Coco's right now, there are spaces that we have within our budget because we see value in making sure that folks that have a disability, that they still have a safe space that they can congregate and meet other peers and do things that make them feel as though they're valuable. These are assets to our great state of Maryland. And there's things that we're not willing to trade under the circumstances that we're in at this moment.
Or turn your back on these people.
You cannot. You cannot. Not just impacting them. You're impacting their families. The indirect and direct people are impacted
in all sorts of care ways. Yep. Anybody that's ever been in a circumstance like that understands the amount of care we're talking about when a person can't fully care for themselves, whether it's a senior, whether it's a child, whether it's someone that's had a problem, an accident, a disability, whatever it would be.
And when we lean into the budget, some of the actions happened because there was injections of federal resources, and they were in from the federal government during COVID. So there were ARPA dollars, there were ESSER dollars. When you see a lot of the cuts that were being made, they were the federal pass-throughs, the federal dollars that are no longer there.
It was a one-time payment.
It was a one-time thing. And now we've made sure that we pull back from a state.
Well, you can't build that into the budget.
We can't magically make that happen again.
If you build the bridge with it, that's fine, but you can't.
It's a one-time occurrence.
Sure.
So that's how the budget. Now I'm going to move over to the $15 minimum wage with tip workers.
Now, this was important to Mars. I know she wrote you a letter. Restaurant Association had been on this. I've been in business with restaurants from the beginning. Obviously, I've known people, dated people. I've never been a server. I've never worked, you know, in that industry. But every drink I've ever had in this city, in this world, has come from a bartender. Mm-hmm. Every meal I've ever had has come out of a kitchen, just like these delicious coconut shrimp just came out of here a minute ago at Coco's. And we're a tip culture, right? Yep. I mean, we in America, we are. And then you go to Europe, you go to Australia, you go to different places in the world. It's not Asia. It's not like that. The tip culture, and we had a long conversation about how it's getting out of hand with carry out and places that, like, I would say you wouldn't think of going into a fast food place ever and tipping there, but now there's an offer to do that across the board. Mm-hmm. So that's an explosive conversation talking about tipping and the people who work in the industry and then what happens and what the proposal was. So I'll leave it for you. I just wanted to put that on the table because everybody out there is familiar with 22%, 20%? You want me to tip you for a muffin, a donut at his bar? Like, you know, you want me to tip at the gas station? You didn't even pump the gas.
Yep.
So I think I could do comedy on this all day.
Yep.
But this, it's not a comedy to the people that work in the industry and the people that own businesses that have the government coming and saying, we're going to mandate that you change the structure of the industry.
Yep. So I just wanted to set the stage and go back to 2019, and I appreciate you laying the foundation. So in 2019, the minimum wage was $10.10 in the state of Maryland, and there were a number of folks that told me that the sky would fall if it ever made it up to $15, but what we did was, in a thoughtful way, we did matriculate, and it hit $15 January 1st of last year.
Well, this was something much like when I was a kid, smoking in the bars was never going to come here, and it did. The $15, that had been in other places. I mean, I had been in other places in the country where it was controversy, it was left wing, it was all that.
Yep.
But it got instituted, and you saw the differences. Where was the model for that? There is a model,
so,
right?
Yep. So what we did was, in 2019, it was $10.10. We then elevated up to 2020. We moved to $11. We moved to $11.75. And we matriculated slowly because we heard what businesses were also saying. And we took in consideration if you had less than 15 employees, so you had moved on an even slower scale. So that's what you look at in reference to getting to a middle. Was everybody happy? No. I had folks on the left that was not happy. They said, hey, you're conceding too much. You're not getting there quick enough for us. And then the business is saying, we shouldn't go there. We should leave the wage where it is and just kind of let it play out from itself. But we ended up moving in the right direction is what I'm trying to say. Unfortunately, Nestor, before we got to 10.10, there was a $7.25 minimum wage right there. I want to say about 2014.
And when it was there forever,
yep,
too.
It was
really,
there forever.
Really stagnated.
But with some of the things, when we negotiate, we leave some people behind. So I'm not sure, because you're very educated on this, more than I'm recognizing. When we did,
I don't do no reading.
Yep. When we did minimum wage back in 2014, the people that we left behind were tip workers. So tip workers used to get 50% of the minimum wage. So you'll see that tip workers will still have to get the floor of 363. That 363 came because as the minimum wage was moving in 2014, those were the subset of folks that were getting left behind. So I've always said we have to go back and grab those individuals. It may not be 100% at what the respective minimum wage is, but at the end of the day, I do think that as everybody else is moving up and us not taking them in consideration, they're still, even though we're at $15 away from that $7.25, they're still at that $3.63 being their floor. So that's where that comes from.
But the floor really is $15, because if they only make $5 an hour and get $5 in tip,
they still have to be
compensated at $15.
Yep, that's
so there is a floor already built in that if you work a shift and nobody comes and it snows and you don't get tipped,
the
boss has to pay $15 an hour.
You're 100% correct. 100% correct. So everybody's not a good employer like Coco's. Let me be clear. So you have some folks that may have a bad day, they may have a bad week, depending on it, and they're not going to go to the Maryland Department of Labor and say, hey, my boss didn't give me what I was supposed to get. And what happens is, how do they prove those types of things? So we're putting more onus on the respective workers to be able to say, hey, do this. That's a lot, Nestor, is from my opinion, and workers that collectively came together and said, hey, we want to move in this form of fashion. Is it the way it was introduced? Is that what would have moved? It didn't move at all. But is that the product that would have came out? No. We've always done things to where we're figuring out how to bring everybody at the table. And I think that Melvin would say the same thing. No, I love working with the senator. Even if we agree to disagree, I know that my door is always open, that folks can always say their position, and trying to incorporate their feelings, their thoughts, their lived experience into the
Well, give me that pushback. That play the other side of this for me. Play the side of Marcy or any business owner who says, hey, this is going to make my crab cakes $5. This is going to make my business more, because expenses are the expenses, you know. And some people say, well, you know, you ever run a restaurant? Do you know what that's about? To talk to the restaurant association that puts that other lobby against what you're trying to do, you try to put yourself in their shoes, and they are making a credible point from a business owner, and I'm a business owner, but there's also the credible point of the staff in saying, I need to be compensated. I'm a tipped worker, right?
So my job is to make sure that I hit a business owner and the worker in that conversation. So what happens is that the restaurant association was very much louder, had greater access, which why they got that carve out back in 2014. Mine's is figuring out what is the thoughtful way to look and take in consideration of what we did and move everybody at that same time while still thinking about Marcella. You call it Marcy, I call it Marcella. But also thinking about businesses like Coco's, but also folks that may not be doing what they're supposed to be doing to what does that look like? And it may look like something in the future, but one thing that we can guarantee is that I'll always have an open door policy, and they will always have a seat at my table.
Senator Carl McRae is here from the 45th. We are at Coco's Pub. At some point, I'm going to get my Maryland Lottery tickets out. And give, I'm going to be like Oprah. You get one. You get one. Maybe $10,000 before it's all over with. The good senator comes out about once a year, and we sit here and talk about all sorts of things. The state of Annapolis and the state of the federal government and how that trickles down. And I'm always going to be worried about the bridge because we're a year out on the bridge. We've got a million things we're going to talk about today. But that bridge was in the water, on fire a year ago this week. Everybody cared. I'm over Costas crying about it. I can't see the bridge anymore. We've redirected all the traffic. We've seen how much more traffic there's been on all the highways around here. When you take that red piece where the bridge was on your Google map, see that it's gone.
It is
give me
right
progress, what you're hearing, what you know, because that is not a 45th district. That's a Maryland bridge.
Yep.
It's not a Republican bridge, not a Trump bridge, not a Biden bridge. That's an American bridge and a big thoroughfare, and the port issues that we're already having with what this guy down in D.C. is doing. What's the state of the state? And let's start with the bridge and work backward. For I know you don't put yourself in Wes's seat every day, but you know he's got a lot of problems down there. I mean, he really does, right?
Yep.
You're in on all of them.
So. Just start with the bridge. I think that was Maryland at its best. We saw a challenge that we were having, and I think that leadership at that moment met that challenge and did it eloquently, but more importantly, did it as a team. Democrats and Republicans, all eight of our congressional folks, both of our United States Senator, our governor, our mayor, our county executive, just seeing our colleagues collectively come together and under one umbrella to move that forward was a great sight. We were very unified, and I'm glad that it's moving in the better direction.
It is.
So like the funding is still there from a federal standpoint. Like the federal government has.
I'm just always worried about Trump messing things up in a blue state.
I think
with an African American mayor and African American governor because he's a racist, and I have no.
Yep.
If he comes and wants my FCC license, he can have it. But he's a racist.
So one of the things that I've seen is that we look at. Education is under attack right now. I just got off a call at 11 o'clock where our public safety dollars around GVRS is now.
GVRS.
Gun violence reduction strategy.
I got it. Otherwise, you sound like a politician, and I don't want you to sound like that.
I'm glad you don't. But public safety, education, Medicaid. We're talking about block grants now for Medicaid dollars and now states from that standpoint. So, like, a lot of things are under attack. This is the one few thing when we talk about the key bridge that has not been under attack. And I hope and I pray that he will see it that way, that because it would slow us down and we've got some fast momentum in reference to making sure that we rebuild. The thing that I think about from a state of the state or state, I look at it also from a state of the city too. I feel very good and I feel very inspired about the moment that we are in the city. When I think about public safety and the mayor giving a state of the city address, Nestor, I think about like that visual, the background that he had when he talked about the list. And the list that some people were on, but Baltimore City wasn't on in reference to violent cities to live in.
The one we're always on.
The one we're always on and somehow.
That we all of our lifetime. Yep. We're getting silver hair, you and me both.
You're right. So, like, that felt very good. I'm very goal-oriented. I measure things. One of the things that I was proud to hear was in reference to literacy outcomes and in reference to math outcomes, we are now setting goals. The mayor is working with our school CEO to say, here's what our outcome should be during this time frame. You remember with the public safety stuff, he said that he was going to get this percentage gain down every year. In the first couple years, he missed. But you know what? It eventually got on track. So that's what I'm saying. If you do not set goals, if you do not measure success and what does success look like so that you can clearly articulate it to the rank and file, to folks that pay taxes and things of that nature, how do we know from that roadmap what the destination is? So I felt very good about us just setting goals specifically around education. I also just think about
education leads to less crime.
Education leads to less crime. And that's what
let's say that out loud.
Yeah, honey. So I'm on air.
That is the truth.
With Dorothy Linick, and she's the executive director of GOCAP. That's a state agency. And they pay attention to all of the governor's office on crime prevention things. But she made a point of doing exactly what you did, stop us and say, while public safety, police officers, GVRS, gun violence reduction strategy, contribute, we have to remember that these other identifiers that indirectly impact crime, and you just did that. I appreciate you.
Well, all we ever got was the murder number, you know, and for me, the shootings, the carjackings, violent crime, threats of violent crime, the perception that going downtown is puts your life in jeopardy, mm-hmm. and the perception of that outside the Beltway, it's everywhere, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a baseball fan connected to a lot of Caucasian folks in the suburbs mm-hmm. through all of this, and I hear it all as it comes up with baseball, as it comes up with going to dinner downtown, and then something bad happens.
Yep.
Something bad happens every week here. Something bad happens in every city. But if it gets illuminated, in the Freddie Gray situation 10 years ago and everything that's happened since then, it really – the good news doesn't travel as fast.
Yep.
It just doesn't.
So I'm going to make sure I share some good news so that folks can travel very fast. When we think about the 400 block of Biddle Street, Nestor, and the work that's going on, we did what we call teacher housing. So we know we have a teacher shortage. We've seen how college dorms and these communal spaces look like. On the 400 block of Biddle Street, you have rental, but you also have home ownership where teachers, we are being thoughtful about who we recruit in our respective neighborhoods and incentivizing teachers to move on that respective block. Right across the street is even more housing, but you know what I'm excited about? The new library that's coming to Johnson Square. St. Francis Academy is a national, they get national accolades from football, basketball, things of that nature. You know what we're doing? We're partnering, and we're actually delivering to where David Cordish is helping us. I was trying my best to get the name out. But building a state-of-the-art football field to make sure that St. Francis is practicing at Patterson or different things of that nature. They need their own respective football field, regulation football field, to be able to continue to recruit that talent, but lift up one of the oldest African-American institutions in the country, not in the state of Maryland, educational institutions.
Well, I had Beano Ranson on a couple weeks ago, proud graduate there, so yeah, taking care of him.
If you come up Harford Road a little bit, right there by 25th Street, you'll see that we're about to build the first public school stadium right there at Harford and 25th, Lake Clark.
By the park.
Right by the park.
Right. So I drove by there on the way up here.
That's going to be super cool because what happens is we're naming it after the first African-American state senator in East Baltimore, Robert L. Dalton. Many people do not know his name, but one of the things is that when they walk into that stadium, it's going to live every day in every town that somebody goes in there. If you look at Perkins, Somerset, and the Old Town and the activity that's going on, you'll see housing is busting at the seams. We have a new grocer coming to Central and Orleans. We have the Nathaniel J. McFadden Learning Play Park where we're investing $6-7 million into that piece of it. And Dana and Danny Henson are doing a phenomenal job just doing a level of development.
Central and Orleans. You're talking about Dunbar.
Right by Dunbar Library, right there at the other intersection adjacent to the Burger King
There's a football field over there too, right by Dunbar, right?
It's a football field over there too. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to get the bearings of where you're doing
stuff. I'm super excited about that. Let's go up Walther Boulevard. Right there at Walther and Northern Parkway, they have this gentleman by the name of Mr. Thorpe. Mr. Thorpe has been teaching young scholars how to swim in his backyard for several years. Before Mr. Thorpe had been doing it several decades, it was his father that was training young folks how to do it. He was looking for a swim facility. Right there at Walther and Northern Parkway, 4M Swim Club is coming there, and we not only secured the lot for him, which was city-owned, is several acres, but we also were able to secure him $750,000 in the past state budget and $450,000 in this state budget. That's an asset for the community. Everything that I'm talking to you about are assets to the community and contributing. I would be remiss if I didn't lift up things like the National Great Blacks and Wax Museum and how we have been taking ownership as a state because they've been derelict in our duties. And when we make that investment, we invest in the BMA, which we should. We invest in the Walters. But at the end of the day, this is the National Great Blacks and Wax Museum. And the state, for the last several years, have been stepping
up. And that's down by the courthouse in North Avenue, right by what I would call Sears.
Yep. The old Sears.
Broadway and North Avenue.
You got it. So you're spot on. So, like, I'm even on Harford Road. Harford Road, we got a
bookstore. Well, we're on Harford Road here.
We got a bookstore. We got a coffee shop. We got a women-owned co-working space. Bramble just did student housing for Morgan just right up the street. Like, we're in a moment, and we're in a special moment. I think that the mayor delivered it in the state of the city, but at the end of the day, like, I can feel it. And I was talking to Ferguson. I was like, we did what we were supposed to do, but we're starting to bear fruit for what we did 6, 7, 8 years ago. We're starting to see it matriculate right now.
Senator Cory McCray is here. We're at Coco's Pub. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and our friends at the Back to the Future Scratch-Offs. We're getting Oriole baseball. We're doing a crab melt here today that I have – do you ever eat at Burke's down at it's now Royal Farms, but Burke's Restaurant was at the corner.
I've been there once. I have been there
Light,
once.
Yep, right? Yep, Light, yep, Light yeah, and Lombard. Yeah. It was there forever. It was comedy upstairs.
Yep.
And they had it was where all the sports writers hung out back when I was a young man. And they had a crab melt there. And sometimes I take the crab cakes home here from Coco's, as everybody does, and I quarter them because they're just too damn big. They're as big as my head. I can't eat all that crab cake. So I quarter it, and I've been getting the Bay's English muffins, and I get extra sharp cheddar cheese. And the way she does the coleslaw here and the way she does her crab cakes are delicious, but it tastes a lot like the Burke's recipe.
Wow.
And they would do this English muffin with crab meat and extra sharp cheddar cheese and grill that, melt it like a pizza.
And you're recreating it.
And today's our day. So it's crab melts on special today. So we're going to be eating that today. And Senator Corey McCray's here. So the 45th, give everybody the footprint of where you are and a little bit about your background. People don't know who you are in your electrician world as well. Because you're a man of vocation. People say, these politicians, there it is, politicians, lifers. I don't know. You didn't think about doing politics. You went to school to, like,
do something.
To do
work
something
with your hands, and build things.
You are a working man, and you had a business and all this, and you give it all up to wear one of these pins and put on a funny suit and try to help people. But you have a gig. You have something to fall back on beyond this politics.
Very much so. So I should have started with this, but the 45th District, the boundaries are Northern Parkway is the northern. Southern is Station North, Hopkins. West is Pulaski Highway, and east has expanded a little bit, so it's right bumps up against Good Sam. So when just for folks that may not know me, I'm born and raised in the city. I graduated from Fairmont Harford. It's right there, Harford and 25th. For those that's a generation before me, they called it Little Clifton. I'm an electrician by trade.
Where'd you go to high school?
Fairmont Harford.
Fairmont
so we
Harford.
Called it the two. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Right next to Lake Clifton.
Lake Clifton area. Gotcha.
Yep,
okay.
Yep. So I live in the Overly community. I live there. My wife, Demetria, also a Baltimorean, daughter of Baltimore. We're raised now four children, Kennedy, Reagan, CJ, and Bryson. And Nestor hit it a home run, man. I think that the apprenticeship shifted my trajectory. Nestor, it was actually my mom that reached out to the Maryland Department of Labor, say, send me every apprenticeship program in the state of Maryland. She just wanted to do something with her son. She knew he was going the wrong direction. And then, luckily,
you were going the wrong direction.
Going the wrong direction.
What was that? What does that mean to a young African-American kid here 20 years ago? What's the wrong direction for you?
So the wrong direction, in a short standpoint, you asked me what high school I went to. Before I went to Fairmont Harford, I went to Northern. Before I went to Northern, I went to Emerson. And then in middle school, it was the same trajectory.
So Edmondson and then
Emerson for 4 months, a year and a half at Northern.
But Northern was where you were supposed to go, kind of, sort of?
What happens is I would move with my mother and my grandmother. So whenever I got on my mother's nerves, she would put me out and move with my grandmother. My grandmother would get upset, then I move back with my mother. And
what did you do to upset them?
It could be a multitude of things, Nestor. I'll say early on, it was just more being removed from school. And I tell folks, this is another reason why this blueprint is very important. Because in elementary school, I was very gifted. I always made the honor roll. It shifted in middle school. So I went to Rockland, West Baltimore.
I saw a lot of that in Dundalk, my man.
And then I got removed.
Middle school was a mess. Middle school was an opportunity to get into nothing but trouble.
Middle school
in my life.
And what happens is that I just think that I was sharp and I wasn't being put to where I was consistently being challenged in a way where I didn't have busyness to get into other things. I could have focused on my education. So I went to Chicopin. I went to Winston. I told you the high schools that I went to, in and out of the juvenile justice system, because of drugs, guns, things of that nature. So when I say that my mom,
you had access to gangs. I didn't see that. I grew up. Nobody came ever recruiting me to any of that other than, yeah, you want to smoke weed, drink beer, get into trouble, race cars. So, you know, I mean, like, that was trouble in my neighborhood, but it wasn't gun trouble. There was drug trouble in Dundalk at the time. Race trouble still that always existed. Now it's Hispanic people moving to Dundalk, but I'm unfamiliar with that. You know, the wire side of this, I'm familiar with walking the streets of the city and seeing people that clearly had access to a lot more trouble than I had access to.
So I do think that it's important. And you're having a very important conversation because zip codes, unfortunately, dictate outcomes. So sometimes zip codes say how long you're going to live. What is the health outcomes? If you don't have supermarkets, if you have concentration of liquor stores, if you have folks that congregate that's not doing what they're supposed to do, and you're walking past that simply to get your education in K through 12, those are different dynamics, and that shifts trajectory depending on the zip code that you live in. So you're absolutely right. When we think about educational outcomes, the young folks in my house, they go to Mathnasium, they go to Kumon, but those things are on like the outskirts of the city. You don't have those tutorial opportunities right here in the city, which is important of why the ESSER dollars, Dr. S was doing something different, Dr. St. Lisa's was doing something different in reference to making sure that we had the literacy coaches after school. So you can learn those types of things in the schoolhouse, even if they weren't in your respective neighborhood. So you're absolutely right. Because of the zip code that I was...
Adult literacy, you mean?
No, youth literacy. So some third graders ain't moving at third grade.
Sure.
But maybe their parents don't read either. And maybe their parents don't read
either.
So we have to have those level of wraparound services that is now happening in our schools because of the blueprint, ESSER dollars coming to it. But I'm going to go back to the zip code. And I do not make excuses. So... the zip code that I grew up in, unfortunately, I was moving at a wrong direction at a very, very quick rate. And when I say a wrong direction, I mean that I was incarcerated twice as an adult, and I was still a juvenile. So, like, that right there is as fast as you go. My mom, I did a 10-month sentence in a place, Victor Cullen, out there in Western Maryland. I came home, was only home for 30 days, Nesta, and I was back incarcerated as an adult, 17 years of age, and turned at 18 over Baltimore City Jail.
What was your overlook when you came back at that time? We're talking about 30 years ago. So those 30 days that made the difference that put you back in the poke.
You think you can do it better. You think that you see something different. You think that you can get there quicker, and that's not the case.
But you weren't getting real help. They threw you back to your parents who couldn't handle you to begin with.
You go back to the same environment, and if that environment lacks opportunity, then you can't see.
In the same zip code.
Right. The access or exposure is just not there. You're going to do the same thing. It's a habit. It's a discipline. So if you don't shift or change the habit or the discipline, you're going to get the same outcome.
Same people, same environment. Right.
So what happens is when I got into that apprenticeship, Nestor, I'm now removed away from them four blocks that I was so used to. All that I knew was the neighborhood that I had grown up in, And now I'm around folks that are not just electricians. They own homes. They own other businesses. They may own a liquor store from that standpoint, but they're doing other productive things that I can then see. And you know what I say, Nesta? They're no smarter than I am. So I bought my first house at 20. I've been hustling all my life. I'm watching the hustle right there in front of me because other people had owned multiple homes. I said, I can do that. I bought my first one. I saved up my money because we made good wages. And then I bought my second one that next year when I turned 21. And I kept repeating the cycle. And only thing that I did shifted was I was exposed to it. I was exposed to other people outside of my immediate vicinity that was doing something different. I was learning. And
sure.
What I then started to do was I worked there, and I also would work on the houses or work at Home Depot. And I'm working 14, 16 hours, so I don't even have time to congregate on the same blocks that I would do all day because now I'm doing something constructive.
But you were a kid that wanted to learn, right?
I think most of us want opportunity. So unfortunately, we don't have opportunity in front of us. So once I got my bite at it, I took it and I ran with it. And I thought that the apprenticeship was hustling me. So back in 2003, 2004, they paid you $12 an hour. And then they said, we're going to show you what you're going to make in 5 years. So you're going to make 15 at your second year, 18 at your third year, 21 at your fourth year, 25 at your fifth year, and you're going to top out making $35 an hour. No one in my family was making $70,000 a year. So I thought that I was like, what is the gimmick? Everything, when you come up in Baltimore, our young folks are so sharp because they always got to be protective. They got to be on the lookout for somebody that's trying to hustle them. I thought they were going to put me out in the third year. I didn't realize that there were employers that value having a trained workforce. So while other folks are paying to go to school.
You thought they were BSing you about the scale?
I thought that they would be. I didn't understand.
They're not going to pay me that much because they're going to get rid of me before they would pay me that much.
They would get rid of me before they pay.
But so you didn't understand the business premise of like. You want great crab cakes, you keep the same staff, right?
And the turnover is not the same. Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right.
That's why the place is packed.
Right?
That's why at 1 o'clock on a Wednesday, the place is packed. But like, those are the types of things. And what happens is, as I got to get mentors, I then had an abundance of mentors. And, like, it just keeps going. And even at this moment, I'm consistently learning, and I'm always having people pour into me. So I get opportunity at such a high level right now, at such a high frequency that it's unreal, and I know that I have a responsibility. I got across that finish line. How can I get more people across that finish line with me. That's is what I think about every day that I wake up.
Well, I'm getting a little tutorial here. Senator Corey McCrae from the 45th here giving me the boundaries of all of this. Let's talk federal government because we have to do this. You mentioned schools and opportunity and zip code. I'm from Colgate, East Point, Dundalk, Baltimore County, 21224, even though it's not Highland Town, it's Dundalk Hunt. And my son lives over in the neighborhood now. He's obviously Hispanic native to me. I was the only Hispanic kid in that neighborhood. Me and the Flores family from Colombia. I was from Venezuela, but I was a gringo in a gringo family, an oddball. Yeah, but there was only one Hispanic family in that neighborhood, and now that neighborhood, 85% Hispanic.
Shifted.
And when I've gone to speak to the elementary teacher at my old elementary school, which has been raised and relifted, thank you, Johnny O, I give him that, and Kevin Kamenetz before that, the late, great Kevin Kamenetz. Talked to the principal over there, and I've talked to the police over there that manage the school. They had a day. It was a 100-year anniversary of my elementary school. Went over. And the teacher told me that the school is 78% Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm Hispanic, and I'm like, but I'm fake Hispanic, not real Hispanic. And I said, well, how many of these kids' parents speak English?
Mm.
She said, zero. Mm. Zero. And I thought to myself, well, how do they take the homework home? You know, we're in a whole different level where Hispanic people are being put in concentration camps in El Salvador. We know the long history of African Americans in this country for over the last 300, 400 years. I wonder where are we headed with this? It's very, very above and beyond all the Baltimore's issues and all the other things we have.
No, we're in a moment.
We're in a moment with this federal government and breaking laws to create fascism that should be the lead story in every conversation we're having.
Nest, I cannot tell you how proud I am to see that Chris Van Hollen is my United States Senator.
Agree with you wholeheartedly.
Nesta, immigration is such a huge issue, but this had moved past the immigration issue and moved more towards the constitutional issue.
Human rights issue.
and when he went there, I think about him not having an end game. He didn't know what he was going to do. He knew what he was going to try to do, but he didn't know what the outcome was going to be. But you know what he did? He did what people want him to do. He kept pushing. He kept pushing, and then he's sitting across the table. And what we're saying is like, he made that happen. He started to believe. He knew that he was doing the right thing, and he kept going the same direction because he was doing the right thing. And I looked at that, and I'm sitting in the car. I just stopped the car. I pulled over, and I parked as I was listening to his press conference, and I was just like, if there's an emulation of what we want in elected officials, not just mean regular people.
Stand up for somebody.
Somebody to stand up for somebody, stand for something. And they see Trump in reference, he's just punching, he's moving, he's doing all this stuff. And a majority of folks are just not moving. They're like absorbing.
Punch
back. And it's like, no, punch back. Do something. That's what we want you to do. That's why folks are apathetic about
government. Good trouble as I walk past John Lewis's statue yesterday in Atlanta. You know, I walked through the Georgia Tech campus and there's, you know, good trouble.
Yep.
And I'm at a loss for what the end game is for our country if we're going to deport everyone that looks like me and subjugate everyone that looks like you. That's not a country we should all want to live in.
And I think the majority of folks do not want to live in that space. And I think that the more that we fight, I think that removes that apathy and it get other people off the sidelines. What you then saw was other elected officials, other congressmen, other United States senator said, I'm going to travel there too. And, like, that's super important.
I will not be silenced, as you know, and I like bringing the issues up even when you and Marcy have different thoughts about 15. That's the whole idea is we talk about things and find that middle so we get the government we deserve, not the government that's thrust upon us.
100%
right?
Agree. 100% agree.
What's next in Annapolis? This Kerwin and money and blueprint, and it's going to come back up in 8 months, right? I mean, we're going to go back down to Annapolis in January. We're going to need to find money, right?
Nestor, I don't even think it will be 8 months. I think that there's a very realistic outlook that we'll probably find ourselves in a special session in September.
Nobody in your seat wants to hear that.
Nobody wants to hear that, depending on the outcome of the federal budget.
Well, that is we've talked about all of this in money. I brought the bridge up, which was a federal project given to the state. You brought up COVID money that has since been spent. What's the expectation? That's a crazy question. I mean, if Wes were sitting here and saying, what do you expect? I know what I expect. I watched him govern for 4 years and lead an insurrection and should be in jail. He's a felon. I don't know what to expect. I expect the bare minimum is what I expect
from
Donald
Trump.
I don't know what to expect from
the federal government, but I do know what I expect for myself. Like, I do have goals and expectations, and my job is to make sure that in these trying moments, in these challenging moments, that I step up and lead. And that's what I'm trying my best to do. I may not know it all. I may make mistakes. We're human. We're going to make mistakes. But at the end of the day, the people that have entrusted me the gift to be able to serve expect me to lead in this moment.
Well, you can't only pick the battles that you can win. You have to pick the battles that are right.
Yep.
You have to pick the right.
Yep.
You fight for the cause. You don't fight for the outcome necessarily.
Yep.
You know. And I think in this particular point, I'm using every bit of my energy after witnessing this from 2016 to 20 and the damage that was done. And I'm not an apologist for Biden or having Weekend at Bernie's run. I mean, Democrats made some huge mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact that they're not leading, they're not sitting in the White House right now.
Yep.
It
got very comfortable.
It's made your job and my life and all of our lives here a lot harder,
yep.
I believe.
Yep. Agree.
All right. What else? The Orioles? You want to do Orioles, Ravens? You got anything for me? No, nothing?
You got nothing? You know what? I'm just thankful at this moment. Like I said, I think that Baltimore is in a really good space, Nestor. I do think that we showed leadership in reference to the General Assembly and coming out and making sure that we still kept our respective priorities.
Well, it was contentious. There's no doubt about that.
It definitely was contentious. But I do think that at the end, you saw us collectively come together, the House, the Senate, the executive branch, making sure that we can represent for Marylanders. And that's important to me because at the end of the day, I didn't go down there to waste my time. My time is very important. I'm very protective of my time. I don't share it with everyone from that standpoint. But, like, we went down there, we made a difference, and that's what counts.
Corey McCray is our senator in the 45th over here on the northeast side. You can find him out on the interwebs. He answers his email. I am living proof of that. good luck. I always see the family out. Springtime, I mean, kids are getting big, right?
They
How
are.
Old are they
I
now?
Got 17, 15, 11, and 9.
Almost done.
So
maybe.
So we
You're never done.
Yeah.
My son was here a little while ago. You never done.
That is true. But I'm excited, man. I got my oldest is thinking about what university. You know, May 1st is tomorrow, and that's decision
day. Come on, Morgan or Coppin, right?
So it's in a rotation. She did get accepted to both. And then, you know, with my 10th grader, she's playing AAU ball with Team Thrill, and that's exciting just to be able to spend that one-on-one time away. A lot of time. And the young boys, they 11 and 9, man. They're having fun, and like, that's real living. That's the stuff that brings joy to my heart.
So you're over here with Morgan, and I know you were over Coppin a couple hours ago because you told me you were over there. You're looking at me. Is there an East Side, West Side thing here?
It's always an East Side, West Side thing.
East Side kids allowed to go to Coppin? Because, look, I'm from Dundalk. We don't go to Patapsco. We don't even acknowledge Patapsco when you're from Dundalk.
I'll say
you know
this.
What I mean?
My
so
wife,
I understand this.
My wife grew up in Oliver, and she's an alum of Coppin. She's a proud Coppin alum. And we make
so you married up is what you're saying.
I very much so did. Thank you for saving me.
I got to speak up for Coppin because I was at Coppin last Thursday, and we're Coppin. We're partners with Coppin.
And I think under the leadership of Dr. Jenkins, like, it's going in the right direction.
Was he lobbying you for your 17-year-old over there? I know he was.
He was. He makes the pitch all
He's
the time.
He's going to be pissed
he
if your kid goes to Morgan because I know they
the
are.
Yep,
you know, I know David, too. But, I mean, it's fun competitive in that environment, right?
I have
two great HBC schools 4 miles apart. That's something,
That is
right?
A beautiful thing. That is a beautiful thing. One of the things I'm excited about, too, that's good for Baltimore is that Morgan is coming down to the old Lake Clifton. So they actually acquired that property, Nestor. And what happens is that's going to indirectly, and what he said was he wanted to do where he holds graduations and be able to have as many family members versus having two tickets or three tickets or things of that nature. But that's going to indirectly increase the foot traffic for neighborhoods such as Chum, Dolly Park, South Clifton Park, 4x4 and Bel Air Edison because it's all adjacent to that respective campus that's about to get a ton more energy because of Morgan being an anchor institution coming down there.
Well, I like East Baltimore. That's why I'm sitting here. So we are just the Stones, we're a short bike ride away on the bike path right around the corner from Morgan State. We're over here at Coco's Pub, one of my favorite places. There's always energy. There's always good vibe. My son had never really been in here.
I'm surprised.
And he came in. It was quiet. We set everything up. And then we walked over to the Safeway because he had to do a little shopping. We came back. And the place came to life. He's like, my God, this place is – Oh, Jamie Costello's here. Oh, I got the senator and I got the governor. I got everybody going on here.
What are you up to, brother?
He's the governor of Rosedale, is what he is. He's the governor of Rosedale on Channel 2. Jamie Costello is going to come Costello us about all things. My thanks to Senator Cory McCrae for always being a good guest with, I mean, this is exactly what I'm trying to use Baltimore Positive to do. People come in. You're reading the Motivation Manifesto here. You always got a book by your side.
I'm always trying my best to figure out
next
how to grow.
Next time you come on, you got to give me electrician, not even 101, just 100. I need to know the difference between ohms and the
current.
Yeah, and amps and amps. Ohms.
Ohm's law. All right. You got it. I appreciate you, brother.
I transferred into horticulture back in high school with Dundalk, so I could just learn plants. We're here at Coco's. We're going to have some crab cakes. We have the delicious cocoa nut shrimp as well in the raspberry jalapeno sauce. We're going to come back. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.